Okay, here we are, Thursday, the day before the end of another week. I hope you had a reasonable day today. It's getting crazy out there. No, not stupid. Not that. I withdraw that statement. It's far beyond crazy. I'm going to have to think up some new words. I think we all could use some new words. Stunning, shocking, surprising, like never seen before. We're hearing these phrases all the time now. And they're running out of clout. They really are. It's part of the semantic war being waged against all of us, but it's just a simple lack of generally a competent vocabulary. We don't have it anymore. We used to have a good vocabulary because there used to be an education system that actually taught vocabulary words. I always look forward to that. New words, new definitions, new meanings. It was a fun thing. But good luck finding that now. Oh, in fact, and this is a true story, I used to get vocabulary books and just read them like a novel or something. I thought they were fascinating. Anyhow, it's bad out there and worse, and it's going to get worse. We can all see where it's going. I think that that's one of the few things we can all agree on. And let me pull up something here real quick. I want to see what they're saying about this. Pam Bondi. Fired. Finally. Never should have been hired. Really. Another blonde bimbo. An idiot. So, what's new? Think back to Trump's first term. Remember the lineup of idiots that came and went? There was a revolving doorway there. So nothing new there. The big story is one that is just not talked about anymore. I first began posting and talking about COVID in 2019. And I watched the whole thing, like you did if you were here then. And many of you followed along on the website or the program. It didn't matter. Then we did almost 500 one-hour programs on the COVID bioweapon attack on humanity. This is an attack on the world. It's no joke. And people don't understand. They were told, and these were seeded stories, that getting COVID was just like getting a bad cold or the flu, and you get over it and you're okay. Nothing could be further from the truth. And then we talked about shedding. I think we were one of the first. I'm not boasting. I'm just telling it like it is. We warned about shedding very early on. It made perfect sense. Any infectious agent can be spread. And boy, was it. The people who thought this all up, Ralph Baric, Fauci, and all the rest of these psychopathic, satanic criminals, when they thought this up, they knew they were going to have a pushback. And maybe 20-25% of the people wouldn't take the shots. Maybe they thought it was less. I don't know. But they came up with a mechanism. Very simple. It's called biological science. And that's spreading of infectious organisms. They knew with shedding they were going to pick up most of the non-compliant. They knew it. And I have something I'm going to play for you in a couple minutes to prove that, and then some. But we're very honored to have our dear friend, Nurse Anne, back with us tonight. And thank you for taking a little time when you're usually resting because you work so hard. Nurse Anne is a pro. She's been at this well over 30 years. She works in a major hospital in New York State, and she has been reporting to us for several years, more than that now, and she knows exactly what's going on. Hello, young lady. Welcome back.
Hello, Jeff. How are you?
I'm still here. Thank you.
Okay. I listen to you still when I can. When I'm not working, I still try to catch the show.
Thank you.
The program.
Well, it's nice. I think people don't understand. I take the position of almost a listener, and I ask the questions and try to lead conversations gently in areas that would be of interest to me because I want to learn. And I learn something, I try to, from every guest. None more so than you. You are literally risking your life. You're in the trenches. You're seeing exactly what's going on. And what's going on is, unfortunately, the COVID bioweapon is gaining momentum. It is shortening lives even shorter than they were already shortened. It is killing people. It is doing precisely what it was intended to do. And I did have a call from somebody. Well, it was first an email, and I did speak to somebody, male or female, I'm not going to say, who worked in the NIH for nearly 20 years, seriously, and was definitely one removed from being directly under Fauci. This person knew exactly what was going on. None of them took the shots. That I was guaranteed. We already knew that. None of them took the shots. All lies. And if they rolled up their sleeve, it was saline. Or they missed the needle and never even poked him. I don't know. But she told me exactly. Nobody took the shots. The person also said that, and I was very pleased about this, not for ego reasons, but for repertorial journalistic reasons. The person said that everything you have said and presented was correct.
Yeah.
And that made me very happy, because I do nothing more than try to bring people reality. And when I heard that, and this is an insider, I was very, very pleased and relieved, because I don't know. I'm like others. I do my best. I'm not a doctor. I'm not an academician. I'm not an, well, what would you call it? Anyway, a health professional. Okay. But I'm pretty smart, and I do a lot of reading. And you very kindly taught me a lot. You've taught everyone a lot. And things out there, you're not hearing about COVID in the news, but my God, COVID is hard at work reducing lifespans and taking people out. So I will turn it over to you on that note, and it's really great to have you back on. Thank you.
Well, it's great to talk to you again. It's been a long time. It's been a while. I've been busy working. We have a sick population now. And a lot of this population illnesses and fatalities that we're seeing are directly related to the vaccinations. You just have to open any chart on any given night and just see the amount of vaccines people still, to this day, continue to take, even though more and more information has been released. And if people would just do their research, just a little bit of research, they would see how detrimental the vaccines are to their overall health. So the huge things that we've seen that have gone increased exponentially since the introduction of the vaccine. Was the cancer. Cancer exploded. In 2020, the National Cancer Centers were reporting the medical costs were estimated at like $190 billion. That was in 2020.
Right.
And now we're at $250 billion. So the growth of cancer has just gone through the roof. The treatment for cancer...
250, repeat that.
Reporting the medical costs were estimated at like $190 billion. That was in 2020.
Right.
And now we're at $250 billion. So the growth of cancer has just gone through the roof. The treatment for cancer...
250, repeat that. Ian. What did you say exactly?
No,
I want to make sure everybody heard that. What did you say?
So in 2020, the national cancer medical costs were estimated at $190 billion.
Got it.
And by 2026, the new projections for this year are estimated at $250 billion. So they've increased in less than 5 years over $50 billion. And costs. And the reason being that we're seeing so much of it.
Are we surprised? No.
Not at all.
It's sad, It's a terrible thing when someone you know, someone you perhaps love, comes down with a verdict that they have cancer. And by the way, it's stage four, and the person had no idea that they had cancer, and yet it's terminal, it has spread, and there were no real overt indications that they even were infested with cancer. How in the world does that happen? That's a remarkable aspect to this. Is there something extra stealthy about this kind of turbo cancer that is running rampant? What is it?
Well, the thing about it is the medical system cannot wrap their hands around it because they're not getting to it in time. Like, we're seeing people in their 20s, their 30s, their 40s, and their 50s with anything from stage 3 to stage 4 cancer. Like, they're not even getting to those young populations. It's just so aggressive. So they'll be healthy for so long, and then all of a sudden they'll be... It's usually, as I have said so many times, they don't even know they have it. They come in to our ER with something completely different, and they're given a workup, and we're finding, like, in the you'll see a lump in the liver, or you'll see something in the lungs, or you'll we've seen a lot of brain tumors lately. A lot of people were presenting like as if they were having strokes, and very stroke-like symptoms. But they were coming in and they were getting worked up for a stroke, but then it turned out they actually had a brain tumor.
Wow. See, so this is something we've talked about this in the past. People just don't know. And when they're told this, you're around people who are suddenly diagnosed, and they're probably remanded to... being admitted because they have to start doing this and that, surgical or otherwise, radiation. These people must be in shock, some of them, and disbelief. Have to be.
They're not ready for such a terminal diagnosis. It's not always terminal, but the thing about everybody who hears cancer, it's the kiss of death. So no matter what they do, that initial diagnosis is always like the kiss of death for somebody. And especially when they're so young.
Excuse me. Let me ask one question. Yes. Am I correct that I'm reading? I mean, are these stories valid? That a lot of teenagers are showing up with colorectal cancers? Is this true?
Children. Kids, yeah. And the babies are showing heart disease, heart problems. There's tons of, in the hospital where I work, it's adjoined to the children's hospital, and I don't work at the children's hospital, but you overhear the codes being called all the time, and there's tons of so a code call, as everybody knows, is basically somebody has effectively died.
And this comes from the children's hospital, Anne?
Children's
codes
hospital.
In babies, the children's hospital.
Babies. In the NICU, in the NICU, in the PED unit. It's incredible. And there's every night there's calls. And the last shift I worked, we had two people who we had to intubate that night on our unit that needed intubation, right, like emergently. So the problem is we are seeing a very sick young population. The children are getting hit with the heart problems and the cancer problems, and the adults are getting hit with a gamut of stuff. They're getting hit with a lot of the heart problems, the cancer problems, autoimmune is another one. And it's off the charts on how sick our population is now. And that is, if you can see the people who come in that have all those vaccines, whether they're flu vaccines or they're COVID vaccines or boosters, those are the people we're seeing that are deathly sick. The people who come into the hospital who might just have come in presented truly with chest pain and had a myocardial infarction, which is effectively a heart attack, that never had the vaccines, they genuinely, once they get treated, they walk out the door again, you know, and they're back at their best life. But not the people who have taken the vaccines. Their length of stay in the hospitals are longer. Their recovery is much slower. Their history of developing heart or other hospitalized complications while they're in the hospital, getting treated for one disease problem, they'll develop another or multiple. And some people may not make it at all. And either they're either coding on us or they're so sickly and so ill and so many organs are compromised that families are having the discussion of having them go on hospice care. That's the two directions it goes, or three directions. You potentially may go home, or you're going home with hospice, or you're staying in the hospital for quite a long time with your recovery and hoping you don't get something worse while you're there.
Wow. I did see a story, last week, I ran it, and it was a fairly wide sampling of young people. I'll say 14 and under. And they were screening for myocarditis. And I think it was 100% of those who presented with myocarditis had taken the shot. 0% if they hadn't taken the shot. There was a 100% correlation between taking the death vax, myocarditis, and a positive diagnosis for SAME. This is not good. Myocarditis, pericarditis, endocarditis, these are heart issues, and they come from the shot and the spike. And for those who laugh at the spike and say it's a fraud and whatever, and there are people like that out there, all I can say is good luck to you. It's not a pleasant thing. And those people are some of the most shocked of all, I'm sure. What do some of the patients say to you who have come in for a headache and they end up with stage 4 brain cancer? They're diagnosed. What do these people say? How do they act? I can't even imagine.
The first thing is always a state of denial. That's always his classic. That can't be kind of thing. I was well last week kind of thing. How can I have such a horrible diagnosis now? And the families have a hard time wrapping their head around it too, because they'll say they were fine last week. We had a party and whatever, and this can't be. So the patients and the families are really, really struggling with the level of sickness and illness that they've been dealt. Mm-hmm. And then it doesn't get any better after that, because the treatments are just as bad as the actual disease. So we work in the neuro ICU, and so normally we would not normally be dealing with the cancer patients as much. If they are diagnosed with cancer, they typically would end up going to another unit like the oncology, where you are a nurse that's oncology certified to administer the medications that are appropriate for those patients. So, but the problem is they present like strokes, so they come to us first, and then we discover after a workup that they actually have a brain tumor. And it's all over the map too. It's in all different parts of the brain. So it's really strange how certain parts of the brain are getting affected. It's not always the same type of brain cancer. It's all over the map. So but our floor is, I myself am not certified to administer oncology medications. And it's a big deal because they're toxic. They can't. They have to be administered.
Terrible.
Terribly.
Everything
toxic.
We've ever heard about the brutality and ruthlessness of modern cancer treatments is true. And Nurse Ann sees it, sees the results of it, hears about it, has for decades. It's not a joke. Basically, they don't have a cure for cancer. They still don't. Now, that said, let me just ask all of you to take a moment. If you're worried about this issue, look over on the right side of the homepage, look under the COVID bioweapons section, and scan for stories of interest, because you're going to find out in those stories that there are many, many things that these death shots can do to the body to tip it over. One of them is the spike protein encountering any normal protein in the blood in your circulatory system will tip that normal protein over and turn it into a prion, as in mad cow protein. And from then on, that now mad cow protein will go on and tip over other proteins that are not prions and turn them into prions, at least in terms of their activity. So this is a cascade, and it goes through the blood all over the body, and prions, as most of you know, can settle in any organ system, but primarily and principally the brain is what we hear about. It has no mercy on the brain whatsoever. We now know that ivermectin and fenbendazole and now mebendazole is the one of that's the one of choice. Ivermectin and mebendazole, I am not prescribing, I'm just telling you, there is a ton of literature of how effective that can be with many cancers. I'll leave it at that. You do the research. Ivermectin, mebendazole, ME, and then fenbendazole. Look it up and do your studies. So if you've got an issue or you know somebody who does, that's one avenue of pursuit that is red hot right now. Please continue.
Yeah, and the problem with, I'll just close on this because it's not actually, we're with the patient for a little bit until they're stabilized and then they have to go to an oncology unit. But the other thing is those drugs that are administered for treating cancers, you have to know exactly what you're dealing with because it has to be administered a certain way. It has to be dealt with. You have to use certain precautions when you're hanging the drug. You have to watch that you're not getting exposed to it. And disposing off the IV lines and the bags afterwards, that's mm-hmm. all protocol that you have to follow. You have to get specialized training on that. It is a, from what I remember, I believe it's a year's training to get certified mm-hmm. in oncology wow. administration of drugs.
Right.
So we had this young nurse on our floor, and the doctor went and ordered this immunotherapy that they wanted to treat this patient with, who was only 56 years of age. And I was only overhearing the conversation, and I was like listening in the background to hear what was going on, and they didn't know anything about the drug. She hadn't looked at the research, the drug. She hadn't questioned the drug. She was just going to go and hang the drug. And I said, I came out and like, I am a survivor of cancer myself. So I came out and I go, hang on a second. What are you doing? I go, you're not certified to hang this drug. You know, tell me what you know about this drug. What side effects did to this drug? And the side effects to the drug were nearly worse than the actual cancer itself. It was amazing how many complications could go wrong. He could have cardiac arrested. He could have been gone into anaphylactic shock. I was like, do you realize what you were about to hang on this patient? Now, this is the same nurse who gave me a lot of grief a few weeks prior and thought she knew everything. And, of course, you know, they're coming in hot with this. You know, they're young and they think, oh, I'm ready to take the world on. I know everything. Well, this girl was fully prepared to hang this medication. And I don't know what came over me, but I was like, I have to step in here because I can't. This is absolutely wrong on every level. So I'm like, there is no way you should be hanging this drug. You need to call the doctor back and say, if that drug has to be hung on this patient, he needs to go to the oncology unit. You're not licensed. You are now practicing outside your scope. And if you do, be ready for the repercussions of such a thing if something goes wrong. I said, did you read up on the side effects? And I had printed off a whole list of the drug how you administer it, the side mm-hmm. effects, the treatment. You have to actually be ready with, if possible, possibly intubate the patient if the patient codes on you. I mean, it was incredible. But I got so emotionally caught up in it. I don't know normally, but it just pissed me off to no end because this girl was going to hang a drug that she didn't know anything about. And this, for all the people listening,
this could be your nurse. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
This could be your nurse. I'm just saying, you better start asking questions.
They hate that, don't they? Most of them, don't they? They hate that. Yeah. Especially doctors hate that. They don't want to be asked or questioned about anything.
Yeah.
They're gods.
Yeah. And then I said to the girl, I go, where's the consent? Where's the signed consent that the patient signed saying he was willing to go along with his drug? Not on the chart. I go, you got to get this doctor down here. You got to get him in the room. And you have to tell that doctor that he has to tell that patient everything about that drug. Everything. The treatment, the reason for it, and the side effects, and what potentially could happen if it goes wrong. And I guarantee you, as soon as the patient hears all of that, he's not going to want to take this drug. He's not going to sign
story.
That paper.
What a story. I guess in general...
I was so emotionally upset by it. I was upset for 2 days.
Well, you have a heart, and you have brilliance about your profession. And you know what's going on, and I don't know how you do it. I really don't. How you stand things like that. This goes on all over the place. This goes on in every hospital, I'm sure, to some degree. And worse, who the hell knows what goes on? I mean, the lack of competence and training now is I guess, growing. Are these people getting any better, these health professionals, RNs, LVNs, nurse practitioners? Are they getting to be more competent? How do you see it?
I think they're pushing them out of school really fast, and they're having them pass on the state boards, and that's fine. But the problem is the hospital isn't taking the time to train them up adequately, I think, to let them know you don't know everything and you're not going to know everything. Maybe in 5 years you might know something, and maybe in 10 years you know a little bit more, but trust me, you will not know everything. And just to prove a point, I myself learned something new that was around for a while. I didn't know anything about it, but it's been around for a while, but I learned something new in the last couple of weeks. So this is an interesting story. We started seeing these people coming in having this unusual heart arrhythmia. And the doctors were writing it down as tachycardia bradycardia syndrome. Now, it's been around since the 70s, or certainly it's been diagnosed. 73 was when it was first diagnosed, I believe. But we had never really seen it. You either are either in a... Tachycardia is a very fast heart rate, where your heart's working overtime. Bradycardia is when your heart's working way too slow. Here's what was happening. The patient would go into a slow heart rate, say like 30, even 20. We've seen them at 20 beats per minute. And then all of a sudden they go like that and then jump up to 150. And we'd never seen anything like this. I haven't seen it ever until the last few weeks. So this tachybradycardia syndrome has been around. It's also kind of known as sick sinus syndrome. But we've not seen it in my practice in a long, long time. We don't see it like this. You usually see them either bradycardia or tachycardia, but not very often this way. So we've been seeing a huge uptake on this rhythm.
What's your take? Are these people, you ask them if they've taken the shot. Many nurses won't bother, I'm sure. They just don't ask them. They just treat. But you'll often ask, as far as I remember, our other conversations.
Yeah, I'll always ask.
These people who are showing tachy Brady, are they vaxxed for the most part? I would guess they probably are.
They're always vaxxed. Every one of these patients were vaxxed. which is why I was like, this is something different. This is something, that's why I was like, I've not seen this. Now, it has been seen in the 70s, because I did a bit of background check on it afterwards.
But was it the same thing, Nurse Anne? Was it the same thing, or was it just something similar that you saw back then? And now what we have, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
It was something very rare back then. They were calling it the sick sinus syndrome. And it was at that point, and they still do it to this day, is the best thing they can do for this is usually, if you want to really correct it, is put in a pacemaker. Because the problem is you have to take over that, you have to go in and manually have a machine take over the beats of the heart. By putting in a pacemaker, the internal heartbeat will no longer, it's not functioning the way it should. So they're having to go in with a pacemaker and program a heartbeat to sustain that regular
rhythm.
Heartbeat.
Understood.
So they, yeah, rhythm. Yeah. Yeah. So,
is it, okay, here's a question. Is this, all right, this is the heartbeats from the autonomic nervous system. Is this possibly damage, vax damage of the neurology of the autonomic nervous system? Is that what's causing this possibly?
No, it's usually an electrical thing. It's in the impulses, the electrical impulses are just firing off. The heart should send an electric signal from one part of the heart to the top of the heart to the bottom of the heart to the next ventricle to the, that's where the way it's meant to work. Okay, but the electrical system is all messed up.
Is this a physiological, excuse me for the interruption, but is this a physiological interruption? In other words, does the heart have myocarditis and damage therein that physically messes up the actual electrical transmission lines of the heart, so to speak? Is this a physical issue base of it?
Yeah, the number one cause usually is associated with atrial fibrillation. And if you remember, I talked about that all the time last year and all the years, that atrial fibrillation, the amount of people that are diagnosed with atrial fibrillation isn't crazy. So basically, it is actually a physiological problem. Because what happens is the natural pacemaker in the heart fails. It doesn't work. It doesn't function the way it should. And it causes all kinds of problems. But the underlying cause, typically when we start to investigate, is atrial fibrillation. Also, structures of the heart can be another reason why.
Is this spike damage? Possibly? Spike damage?
Totally. Most likely. Because it affects the heart it affects the electric mechanism of the heart, and it affects the structures of the heart. So it causes cardiomyopathy, where it damages the structures of the heart and causes the heart disease. It causes fibrosis. So there can be some fibrosis that can be the reason why it's causing all this electrical, physiological problems. There's certain diseases that can cause it, like sarcoidosis is one of them that comes to mind. I know there's a few of them like that. And then autonomic, you hit it, autonomic dysfunction, where the electrolytes are all thrown off balance. But the underlining problem usually is some other disease that leads to that then leads to the rhythm being thrown off altogether.
Gotcha. Okay, we don't have but about 15 minutes left, and I want to cover this. You and I, in the beginning, talked very diligently about shedding. And you work around these people all the time. When I go to the store, everybody knows I wear a mask all the time. I'm not saying the mask is perfect. It's going to give me an advantage. Even if it's 10%, I'll take it. I don't hang around other people. And if I hear somebody cough, believe me, I go the other way. Not a joke. Some people actually cough and they'll cover their mouths. This is not something to be taken lightly. Now, we have two issues that are being shed. One, the spike protein. And two, the mRNA itself. They're both being shed and spread. There is a test now for the unvaxxed to find out if they have been shed upon to the extent that they have mRNA in their blood. Now, this woman, I'm going to play a little two-minute clip. This unvaxxed woman, who has obviously spent a lot of time trying to protect herself from the vaxxed, sent her blood to safeblood.com to see if there was any evidence of her being shed upon and contaminated with mRNA. All right? Now, I'm going to play this. She, online, had her cam set up. She got her test results to see if she had mRNA in her blood. She shouldn't have. And she's going to open the results and react to them online. So let's listen.
Okay, my results are in, and I have not looked at them yet. Kind of nervous. And if you're not sure what I'm talking about, I did a post like a week ago on safeblood.com, which is a service where you can get unvaccinated blood, meaning unvaccinated from COVID-19. And through that, I talk about how they have a test to see if your unvaccinated blood is really unvaccinated, because there's somebody that's doing a test that is showing 90% of those that are unvaccinated from COVID-19 are showing synthetic mRNA in their blood. And so this was just a little fingerprint test that you do, and I went ahead and did the test, and my results are back.
90% who took this test and who are taking this test are showing mRNA in their unvaxxed physiology and blood. Think about that. Here we go.
Let's see what they say. Okay, let's open the email. All right, I have two attachments. This is attached to the results from your C19 VRA. Also attached is a document that briefly discusses a treatment, should that be something you desire or need to pursue. Okay, gosh, please. I would love to be the 10%, please.
She's worried. She's very concerned. She wants to be the 10% who don't show mRNA in their blood. Here is her opening the envelope or the email envelope and getting her results.
If the boxes below are green and transmission of synthetic mRNA.
They've sped this up just to get through it. She's reading some of the prose and the text on the test result. Now she'll get to the actual result.
If you have injection and the boxes are green, your body functions in such a way that it perceives these things as toxins and was able to discharge them without it getting into the cells. Although rare, we have more than one sample that this is the case. If the boxes are gold and with a Y, there is the presence of synthetic mRNA in your system through transmission or injection.
Again, I am not vaccinated. I did not take any of the COVID vaccines. All right, we're scrolling. Oh, motherfucker.
You heard the word. It starts with an M and ends with an R.
Mm-hmm.
And she just saw the results.
Un-fucking believable. Okay, well, obviously my results are not what I wanted. mRNA sequence presence, yes. N1-methyl, yep. And it tells you which pharmaceutical company is in your blood. Disruption of RNA, yes. Disruption of DNA, yes. I am fucking livid. Again, no vaccines. I did have COVID, Delta variant, no vaccines. So how is this synthetic mRNA in my blood?
Well, the only answer is shedding, or when she was infested, I like to use that term better, with the COVID Delta variant, she got it then. So either way, she's in trouble. She knows it. So, she's smart. She's done some research. Go ahead, Ann.
Yeah. So even out in the community and wherever you go, it doesn't matter, restaurants, grocery stores, whatever, if there's people who have an active infection of COVID at the time, that they can have that for like 7 to 10 days and be shedding on people. And it's very easy for them to shed on people who are not vaccinated because it's spread through the respiratory droplet system. It's aerosols while they're talking, coughing, sneezing, yawning, you name it. And then also shedding also occurs in the stools of people. So it's less significant for transmission, but it still can happen.
Well, that's how they're testing various areas around the country. They're testing the sewage treatment plant water to see what the levels are, how dense they can't separate out how many people, but they can certainly read the abundance of spike and mRNA, et cetera. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not surprised that she's done the test and she finds out she has it because I think there's probably none of us that probably can actually say we're absolutely free of it now. I think there's a remnant of it in our system, for sure. Because
and if you... go ahead, Anne, please. Go.
Yeah. Because in the earlier part of this whole process, nobody really knew what we were dealing with. So the people who were quite lax and weren't doing the protections that they probably should have been doing at the time, they were getting exposed, whether or not they took the vaccine or not. And it's a worldwide event now. There, you go on airplanes, you don't know who's got what on the airplane. You don't know who's, in the airport. It doesn't matter. I'm not surprised, Jeff, to hear those results. Yeah. Is what I'm
90%
saying.
Of the unvaxxed who take this test have mRNA. If you don't remember, the mRNA are the actual instructions that go into your cells and convert that cell for the rest of its life from producing whatever normal proteins that cell is producing, and they all produce proteins, into only producing the spike protein. Once mRNA gets into the cell, I'll repeat, the cell no longer produces what it usually does. It produces deadly spike protein only. That's what the mRNA does. That's the instruction booklet that goes into your cells. It's coated with liquid nanoparticles to make the entry easier into the cell. It's called genetic reprogramming of your cells, and they'll never stop producing mRNA as long as you're being exposed, and people are being exposed all the time. Kiss somebody, that's all it takes. Even less than that, one exhalation, that's all it takes. So I don't mean to tell you to give up, but you got to be realistic. And if you get this horrible synthetic bioweapon virus, I've just put up two more papers about permanent brain changes in people who have simply been infested with the COVID bioweapon one time. Brain changes, personality changes. We've talked about that too. Hostility usually is one of the reactions that people have to becoming infected. They get hostile. Their brains are changed. The personality changes. We've heard that how many times? It's just crazy.
Well, I talked to a doctor about the whole shedding thing, and they said you can be walking around, which is why we see them a week later in the hospital. They'll be walking around for about 7 days with the virus. So while they're walking around and not realizing they're getting sick, they're shedding. So anywhere between 7 and 10 days, you can have the kind of an infectious disease that you're spreading.
The incubation period is that long, and you can be shedding and not know
and
it, and not feel
and
sick.
Not know
wow.
it, and not wow. know it. And then he goes, and then he was saying, if you're severely ill and compromised, like, for example, the cancer patients, the shedding can extend to 20 days longer, like 20 days or more. So they can be actually even more... they have a higher incubation period because they're spreading it for a longer period of time. So the thing is that people, they don't know it. Most of the people who come through the ED
don't
know they have it until...
Some of them have the flu or think they have the flu when in point of fact they don't. They have COVID. It's a similar profile of some of the symptoms. They don't know it. Go ahead, please. This is crazy.
So it isn't until they start really getting the symptoms. They've already had the active viral disease, but they don't know they're sick until they actually start getting the symptoms. And then by then, God only knows where they've gone before they've actually come and into the emergency room. So, of course, we're seeing COVID all the time. We're seeing it in nursing homes. We're seeing it in the hospital. It's never gone away. Of course, the people, the population is just getting sicker and sicker. And every time you have an event with COVID, it just makes you just that much sicker. So all I can say is protect your immune system and make sure you're taking the appropriate steps for trying to prevent getting ill in the first place. Right there, I would say all of the things that you need to take are the vitamin D, selenium, zinc, vitamin C, all of the things we discussed during COVID, and then you throw in ivermectin and fenbendazole. You do that periodically, especially if you're feeling sick or weak.
Some people are taking ivermectin now essentially permanently, and they're doing fine. I'm not saying do it or don't do it. I'm just saying some people are taking a 12-milligram dose of ivermectin every day as a prophylactic, whatever. Then you've got quercetin bromelain. You've got NAC, which you should also be taking. And there's a better form of NAC available now. I take a lot of things. MitoQ, it's called, right? You've got that. That's another good product for heart strength. Anyway, once you get tagged with this, there are, I want to say dozens, but I know it's higher than that, hundreds of potential issues that can show up in your health profile, which are not good for you. I'm being very polite with my verbiage. Go ahead, Ann. We've got about 2 minutes.
The bottom line is if each time you get an infection of COVID, you're weakening your immune system each time.
And doing more damage potentially to your brain, to your heart, whatever.
Your lungs, your liver, you name it. Your gut, your bowels are so important for your autoimmune system. It's incredible. Yeah. Once that's affected, your autoimmune system is completely thrown out of whack at that stage, because that's where a lot of your where you fight a lot of infection, surprisingly, is in your actual gut. But the thing about it is, the more exposure you get, the worse each event is making just that event.
It compounds every time you get it. I understand.
Exactly. Yeah. But, the thing about it is that people need to, I think there's enough research out there now that people shouldn't be ignorant of this information at this point. You can go on and you can find it very easy, and they talk about it openly now, only because I believe the damage is already done.
I'm so with you.
The damage is done.
So let's say 80% have been vaxxed. Let's just say that. 20% haven't been vaxxed. But 90% of that 20% of unvaxxed people have mRNA and probably spike in their blood right now. That's called shedding.
I would concur with that. Probably the number is 100%, really, in all honesty.
In all honesty, you may well be right.
Because you're getting exposed.
Yeah.
Everybody's exposed out there.
When I go out with a mask, I'm being exposed, all right? And that mask is not perfect. It just isn't.
Yeah.
I should probably go to a half-face mask, a real one, and get serious about it, more serious. But I don't know. This is bad. I want to mention one other thing. Go ahead, Ann.
Build your immune system up. That's the thing. That's the key. Keep
Please
working
remember
on building your...
Very good. Please remember also that the paper, and I have it posted, that Allison C. Allison is the only thing lab clinically producing the results that we want. It kills the spike protein. Allison kills the spike protein. The paper, the scientific peer-reviewed paper is up. It came from Canada. If you take one Allison capsule a day, you're going to begin to at least deal with the spike protein in your system. I won't say eradicate it, but I'll say you're doing something to reduce it. One a day, in my view, is the minimum. And I have a lot of people now who are beginning to do that. You just don't have any options. It turns out, and I've had Allison as a product for over 20 years, and it turns out that Allison C, it works. It will kill the spike protein, and it will kill the spike protein inside the body's cells. That's the power of Allison. So that's good news, at least, a little bit. Final comment?
I think that's great advice, and I think that that people should definitely stock up on it, because not only, I mean, it will fight nearly every kind of bacterial and viral disease out there. So Allison C is definitely really a good product, and they should try it, because I was at my worst, and I took it, and it was what brought me back. So I can speak to it only because I know I've taken the product myself.
Yeah, I remember.
I would recommend it.
Well, thank you, my friend, and you be safe, and we'll have you back whenever you want to come back on. And you're doing great work. You're a hero.
Well, thank you, Jeff, and we will speak again, and just hope everybody stays healthy.
Okay. Thank you, dear. Take care.
All right. Thank you.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Nurse Anne. Wish we had a million Nurse Anns in this country, but there's only one original, and that's what you just heard. We will be back with more in just a few minutes. Hang on.